friends. Welcome to Crime Castle. I'm Sarai. This week, I'm going to dive into a mystery. I have a love-hate relationship with mysteries because I love the mystery part because it's like weird and spooky and like you get to think and all this stuff. But then I hate when they're not solved, you know, because then I just feel unsatisfied. I'm like, well, I need to know what happened. So then that's the part that kind of sucks about mysteries, but I do like speculating, and kind of going with common sense on what we think most likely happened. So I've been waiting forever to do this, and there's a freaking dove that won't shut up, so outside, so hopefully you don't hear it. He just goes on and off, like, making this annoying noise, so I apologize. I always have sound problems. I'm sorry. But anyway, so, yeah, so this mystery that I'm doing today is the mystery that is commonly referred to, basically, who put Bella in the witch elm. So this takes place in the English Midlands in Hagley Wood. So this mystery is almost 80 years old now, which is, like, pretty crazy because it seems almost modern-ish, but old-ish at the same time, to me, anyway. So anyway, I'm going to tell you the story. So on April 18th, 1943, there were four young boys in the wood, in the woods, and they were poaching. So it was this boy named Robert Hart, Thomas Willits, Bob Farmer, and Fred Payne. So they ended up on this private property. The estate owner was Lord Cobham. And so eventually they were on the property and whatever, and they came up on a hollow elm tree. So the boys thought that would be a perfect spot for a bird's nest, so they were like, let's go check it out. So Bob Farmer was actually the one who decided to climb it, and once he climbed it, he looked down into the hollow trunk, and he suddenly saw the empty eye sockets of a whitened skull staring up at him from among the twisted branches. At first, he didn't realize what he was looking at and thought it must belong to an animal. And then he started to pull the skull out, and he, like, it was, you know, stuck within branches and everything. And so he started to pull it out, and he saw a small patch of rotting flesh on the forehead. And there was some remains of hair, and the front teeth were crooked. So once he, like, saw all of that together, he realized what he had found. So, horrified at his discovery and knowing they were in the woods illegally, the boys decided not to tell anybody about it because they didn't want to get in any trouble. So, they put the skull back in the tree, and then they quickly made their way home. And, you know, they all vowed, like, don't tell anybody, whatever. So, but what ended up happening was the youngest boy, who was 17-year-old Tommy Willits, he felt very uncomfortable about keeping that secret, and eventually he decided he's going to tell his father what they'd found. So, of course, the father then goes to the Worcestershire County Police Force, and they went to the site, you know, the following morning, the police did. So inside and around the old tree, they found not only the skull, but they also found a complete skeleton, a crepsled shoe, and some fragments of rotted clothing. During a careful search of the surrounding undergrowth, a severed hand from the body was also discovered buried nearby. So Professor James Webster was the head of the Home Office Forensic Science Laboratory in the West Midlands. He was pretty cool because he had set up the West Midlands Forensic Science Laboratory at Birmingham University prior to World War II. Professor Webster was the one who examined the body. So he examined the body, and he basically concluded that it was a woman who was probably about 35 years old, and she had been dead about 18 months. This put her death at about October in 1941. Did I say the year already? Yes, I did, right? Yes, I did. Because they found it April 1943, and then they believe she died October 1941. So she also had a taffeta in her mouth, and they believe that she had given birth at least once. She was about 5 feet tall, and they said she had mousy brown hair. I don't know if it's moosey or mousy. I'm not even sure what that means. But that's what was there. She had like irregular teeth in the lower jaw, and then a distinctive overlapping of the front teeth. I know I say this every time, but literally you can just Google who put Bella in a witch elm, and you'll get the witch elm, you'll get the several things will come up on images, including her teeth. So there were no marks of disease or violence on the body, but it was declared to be a murder by asphyxiation because she had that taffeta in her mouth, so they believe that's how she died. And then the coroner, Professor Webster, also believed that the woman was probably murdered and then pushed into the hole on the tree while she was still warm. So the reason why he thought this was because he said it would have been impossible to fit the body in the tree once rigor mortis had set in. This is what he said, quote, "I cannot imagine a woman accidentally slipping in there. Neither do I think it reasonable for a woman to crawl into that place to commit suicide." End quote. He also believed she must have been killed near the tree because he believed it would have been very difficult for someone to carry her body and then place it in the tree before rigor had set in. So I guess it was like pretty, yeah, it was a pretty tight space. So that's his conclusion. There was other items also found along with the skeleton. They found, I believe I already said this, they found her hand some distance from the tree. They said that there was a cheap rolled wedding ring. I wrote something here that's very confusing to me. I'll just skip that. Anyway, the shoes and then various scraps of clothing. So, this is what the professor said, quote, "It was an excellent place for the concealment of a murder. I think it indicates local knowledge." So that's what he said about putting the body in the witch elm. Which is so funny because I was listening to a case on, what is it, like the leaf murderer or something like that? The leaf killer or something like that. You know that weird guy that had like a bunch of leaves in his house? Well, he hid some body parts inside a tree as well. And you know, I was thinking about it, and if you really think about it, it's kind of a good place because most people aren't going to check inside a tree unless there's obviously like a hole in there. Most people wouldn't, you know, climb a tree or something to go look inside. So it's actually a pretty interesting place to hide a body. But anyway, so Professor Webster was able to reconstruct almost exactly what she was wearing at the time of the murder. The police were able to issue a description to see if anyone could help identify the woman. The problem was that this was during World War II, so a lot of people had actually been reported missing, and the records were too numerous for a proper identification. It was a pretty hectic time, so they had a really hard time trying to track people down. However, they did cross-reference the details they had with reports of missing persons throughout the region. At the end, though, they were unable to match any evidence or identify her. They did try to contact dentists all over the country because of the way her teeth were. They thought it was so distinct that she would be able to be tracked that way, but they were not able to do that either. And like I said, you could just Google that and you'll see her teeth if you're curious about it. So this did not bring up any leads, but they were able to trace back the shoes. So the shoes, they were traced back to the Waterfoot Company in Lancashire. Investigators were able to find the owners of all but six pairs, which had been sold from a market stall in Dudley, a town approximately 11 miles or 18 kilometers from Birmingham. During this time, remember, there was war going on, so as the weeks went by, the people started to forget about the case. You know, they had other more, I don't know if it's more important, but more pressing things, I guess, to worry about. So the case kind of got pushed to the side. But then about 6 months later, a message appeared. So the first message was written in chalk on the side of a house in nearby Old Hill. And this is what it said. "Who put Lubella down the witch elm?" So basically somebody graffitied this like on the side of a house, right? So, this is the first time that there was like a name that was connected to this woman, to the skeleton. So that was the first message, right? So over the ensuing months, there were similar messages that appeared, and they were all written in the same hand. They believed it was the same person writing this. So gradually, they took on the same word form and basically ended up being like Hoopa, Bella, and the Witch Elm. So they kept, you know, bringing up this Lubella, Bella, Bella. So the police decided to, you know, follow that lead. So they were not, they followed that lead, but again, like, nothing really came up for them. So since the 1970s, similar graffiti has sporadically appeared on the Hagley Obelisk near where the body was discovered. And like I said, since then, it's been, because Witch Elm, FYI, is not spelled witch as in like a spooky witch who has magic powers and flies on a broom. It's spelled W-Y-C-H, so it's Witch Elm. But, you know, throughout the years and everything, they started to be witch, like a witch, W-I-T-C-H. So now it's like Hoopa Bella in the Witch Elm, like a witch, like a magical witch or whatever. So in a Radio 4 program, they first broadcast in August 2014, Steve Punt suggested two possible victims. One possible victim was reported to the police in 1944 by a Birmingham sex worker. In the report, she stated that another sex worker called Bella, who worked on the Hagley Road, had disappeared about 3 years previously. So remember, the name Bella or Lou Bella was written by the graffiti. So they were thinking that perhaps the graffiti writer was probably aware of the identity of the victim. They probably knew, which is why they put Bella or Lou Bella. So a second possibility came from a statement made to police in 1953 by Una Mossop, in which she stated that her ex-husband Jack Mossop had confessed to family members that he and a Dutchman called Van Ralt had put the woman in the tree. So this one, to me, I don't know why this one seems to be the one that I think it could have been what happened. And it's just so weird. I'm sorry with my voice. My family's been sick for months now. And then last week, my daughter was just so sick, absolutely sick. And I think I have a little bit of whatever she had. So, yeah, I'm like, I don't know if you can hear it, but I'm like, there's like a raspiness that's not very cute. So I apologize. But anyway, so this to me, this theory is the most, like, compelling to me, and it just, because it just involves, okay, I'm just gonna tell you, because it's just, it's weird. Okay, sorry, I got too excited. Okay, so she had said that her ex-husband had confessed, right? So during World War II, there were several German spies that were captured in the UK. So I'll tell you about that, and I'm gonna tell you, okay, hold on, just hold on. So I have a few theories, and then I'm gonna get into it. So, there was a lot of German spies that were captured in the UK, and as a result, in 1953, the case of Bella and the Witch Elm attracted a new line of inquiry, which was war espionage. So, the Wolverhampton Express and Star received a letter from somebody who identified herself only as Anna of Claverley, and she claimed to have information on the identity of Bella, and she was interviewed by Wilfred Byford Jones, and according to this Anna, Bella was a member of a spy ring seeking information about the location of local munition factories that could then be targeted by the Luftwaffe. So Anna was later identified as Una Mossop. So remember, this is the woman whose husband confessed. So she alleged that her RAF pilot husband, Jack Mossop, had witnessed Bella's death. She said that Jack told her that he had become involved in a spy ring along with a Dutchman called Van Ralt. One evening, Van Ralt, accompanied by a woman Mossop believed to be Bella, had picked up Mossop in the car. Shortly after, Van Ralt strangled the woman, allegedly because of her spy associations. Now, there's another version of this story, and it says that Jack Mossop and Van Ralt had been drinking with Bella in a local pub when she became drunk and passed out. The two men then placed the woman in the tree to teach her a lesson. That's stupid. I don't think that's what happened. When she awoke, she was unable to climb out and perished. However, this theory doesn't explain the discovery of the taffeta inside her mouth. Whichever version was reported to the newspaper has become obscured by time, but what is known is that Jack Mossop died in St. George's Hospital, Stafford, before Bella's body was discovered. So, allegedly, he was having these recurring nightmares of Bella's skull stuffed inside the tree, and ultimately this led to a mental breakdown for him. Van Ralt was never found, and investigators considered Mossop's testimony to be hearsay from an estranged wife, and she didn't come out with it until like 12 years after they discovered Bella. So they discarded her. They didn't believe her. They didn't follow that lead. The last man to be put to death in the Tower of London on August 15, 1941. An Amber agent. He parachuted into Cambridge in 1941, but broke his ankle when landing and was soon arrested by the Home Guard. So one person was found on this. On his person was found a photo that was supposedly of his lover, a German cabaret singer and actress named Clara Barley. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Jacob said that she was being trained as a spy by the Third Reich, and if he had made contact, she might have been sent over to England after him. So he said she parachuted into the West Midlands in 1941 and disappeared. So basically, they're saying they believe that this Clara could be Bella, but there is no evidence that Clara was ever parachuted into England, and several witnesses described that Bella was around 5 feet 10 inches tall, which Bella was, remember, only 5 feet. So in September 2016, it was determined that Clara had actually died in Berlin on December 16th 1942. In 1945, Margaret Murray, an anthropologist and archaeologist at University College London, proposed a more radical theory, witchcraft, because she believed that the severing of one hand was consistent with a ritual called the Hand of Glory after the victim had been killed by gypsies during an occult ritual. So her ideas excited the local press because, you know, it's always like, oh, witchcraft or the devil, Satanism, like, it's always like, I don't know why people get so crazy about that. So this led the investigators to consider that there was another killing of this man whose name was Charles Walton, and he was killed in Lower Quinton, and his death was what they would say ritualistic. He was stabbed and pinned to the ground with his own pitchfork in the nearby village of Lower Quinton. So they thought maybe these two are connected. Developing the theory that witchcraft was involved, it was noted that the plant belladonna, which is also known as deadly nightshade, a witch hazel, are both widely associated with the occult, and according to local legend, so is Hagley Woods. So the fact that Bella was entombed inside a tree rather than being buried was also indicative of a realistic slaying, according to Professor Murray. The theory that Bella was executed for some crime against a coven quickly gathered steam and remains a favorite theory even today. Investigators working on the case, however, dismissed the theory, declaring that the bones from Bella's hand had simply been scattered by animal predation. In 1953, another theory surfaced, namely that the victim was a Dutch woman named Clarabella Dronkers, and she had been killed by a German spy ring consistent of a British officer, a Dutchman, and a music hall artist for, quote, knowing too much. Available records and evidence were unable to support the story. Alongside all of these imaginative theories, there was speculation that Bella may have been someone with a transient lifestyle, a person not easily traced in life and thus not particularly missed in death. In August 2014, BBC Radio 4 broadcast a program that suggested that Bella was a sex worker who worked the streets around Hagley Road. According to police files, Bella had disappeared in 1941, which would fit the timeline of events. Locals point out the fact that gypsies had camped out in the vicinity of Hagley Woods during 1941. Perhaps Bella was one of them and had been killed by a member of her own community. Yet another suggestion was that Bella was a local barmaid who had been killed by an American GI. With no concrete evidence to support them, these various theories ultimately led nowhere. One straightforward and perhaps most probable hypothesis is that Bella was a homeless woman with no loved ones to report her missing. Quite simply, she might have been a woman who just fell through the cracks. And that's the mysterious story of the skeleton found inside the witch home. I find all the theories intriguing, and I don't know where they come from, but, you know, I can't decide which one is true. I think some of them seem just not right to me, but I don't know. The fact that her clothes were made of such cheap material could mean she was homeless or, like, maybe very poor. And, so, I mean, I don't know. That could be partially a clue. Maybe she was a sex worker. I don't know. And, you know, she was killed because, you know, whoever she was with got crazy. We don't know. But that Jack Mossop theory seems so interesting to me because there's this podcast. They move now. I think you can find them on Spotify, but it's called Unsolved Murders, I believe. And I like them. Some people, I've read their reviews, and some people don't like them because they think it's cheesy, like the actors and everything. But I like it. It's very, like, it gets you very into the tale, I think, especially when they act it out. And then it's like, okay, I can imagine it. I can see it all in my head. So I like it. Some people, I guess, don't. But they did an episode on this, and it's been like 2 years, I think, since I listened to it. So I don't remember everything. But I remember they went more into this Jack theory. And they said that he was basically, after this encounter supposedly happened with this, with Van Ralt and everything, he changed, and he was constantly having these nightmares, and he would say, like, he said, you know, he could see, it's just so weird that he said, like, you know, he could see like a skull in a tree, which is exactly what there was. And this was all before she was ever discovered, and I believe it lasted like about a year or something like that, and then he died. So I don't know, like, to me that sounds weird. Like, it sounds like he knew about it before, I don't know, it sounds like he knew about it before, before anything was found out. So, I think I have more here on this paper. Okay, I'm just gonna read, I wrote this down, I think this is literally just copy and pasted. I was looking for more on this whole theory. So, I'm just gonna read to you what this says right here, okay? Okay, so una story, right? So about Jack. So in March or April 1941, Jack came home at around 1 a.m. all white and agitated. He asked Una for a drink, and she retorted that in her opinion, he had had quite enough to drink and that he had been out all day. So she made him she made him a drink. So Jack told Una that he had been at the Littleton Arms, which was a pub, with this Van Ralt and the Dutch Piece. I don't know what that is. And that the woman had got, I guess the Dutch Piece is the woman, I think. And he said that the woman had got, quote, awkward. It would appear that the trio then decided to leave. Jack was driving Van Ralt's Rover car, and the woman got into the front passenger seat while Van Ralt sat in the back. At one point, the woman passed out and slumped towards Jack. So then Van Ralt told Jack to drive to a wood where they could, I guess, stick her in the tree. I don't know if that was a plan originally, but that's, I guess, you know, eventually what happened. So Van Ralt figured that, supposedly, this was his story, you know, he figured that she would come to her senses in the following morning. So I guess she was so drunk that you know, he was like, she'll figure it out tomorrow. So, there is a, in 1958, there's a newspaper, the Questers. And in there, it says that Jack made a follow-up visit to the Hollow Tree, but it seems as if, on Una's police statement, she never said that he went back. So there's like that discrepancy. But anyway, between April and December 1941, Una says that Jack was very jumpy. He drank more than usual. He was nearly always away from work and seemed to have more money to spend. And Jack would take his old standard car and go off for days on end without informing her. All of this led Una to suspect that he was obtaining money somehow and that Jack might be may have been meeting Van Ralt. Bill Wilson confirmed that he and Jack owned a 1934 standard black saloon car jointly, sharing the running expenses. In Bill's opinion, however, Jack, quote, was the type of fellow that would not harm anyone, and he did not have much backbone. In Bill's opinion, the story about the Dutch piece, which I guess the woman, and the Hollow Tree might have been something that Jack imagined he had done or that he dreamt about when, quote, he was full of drink. By December 1941, Una had had enough of Jack Mossop. She too noted that he was very fond of women and that women's clothes appeared in their house. On December 13th, she left Jack and moved to Henley in Arden, presumably in the company of James Hainsworth. She did visit the house at 39 Barrow Road on three occasions after December 1941, trying to retrieve her possessions, including furniture. On one of those occasions, she saw Jack and he told her, quote, that he thought he was losing his mind as he kept seeing the woman in the tree and she was leering at him, end quote. Jack held his head in his hands and said, quote, it is getting on my nerves. I am going crazy. And that was the last time that Una saw her ex-husband, Jack. So, I don't know, guys. What do you think? To me, that sounds like it could have been Jack and this Van Ralt. I don't think it's true that, oh, she was drunk, they stuck her in a tree. But, and obviously, you know, she had that piece of cloth in her mouth, so she was suffocated, clearly. But, yeah, I don't know, it's just weird that his nightmare seemed to, like, you know, similar to the crime scene and everything, and that was all before the body was even found. And like I said, you know, the wife, she noticed how much he changed, and it's all around the time that Bella supposedly had died. So, I don't know, he just seemed like he was guilty of something, and, like, he couldn't handle it. So, I don't know, I'm not sure why the investigators just kind of, like, discounted it. I don't know if it's because they couldn't find Van Ralt, but even if they couldn't, I don't see how... I mean, I guess it's hard to follow a lead when everybody's, like, dead and missing, but... it just seems to me like it could be, that could be it. I don't know. That's what I don't know. I think they should have gone more into it. I don't know. But maybe they have information that we don't have. I don't know. Let me know your theories, please. I love this episode. I love this mystery. It's just so mysterious, if you will. Yeah, let me know your theories, please. You can find me at Crime Castle Pod on Twitter. That's like Crime Castle and then P-O-D. I'd love to hear them. Anything that you might know, something I missed, I don't know. Tell me what you think about this Jack Mossop theory. I like it, but who knows? I could be totally wrong. Send me your thoughts. And that's it. It was a quickie today. I hope you guys enjoyed, and I'll talk to you guys soon.